Bloody Mary is a folklore legend consisting of a ghost, a phantom, a spirit conjured to reveal the future. She is said to appear in a mirror when her name is called three times. The Bloody Mary apparition may be benign, maybe not. Depending on historic variations of the legend, the Bloody Mary appearances are mostly witnessed in group participation games. Some people will go into a bathroom or a room with a mirror and shut off all the lights. It's pitch black. And then you stand in front of this mirror. Now you can't see it. And you conjure up Bloody Mary by calling the name three times. In a moment, we'll be talking with someone called Bloody Mary. She's written a book called Bloody Mary's Guide to Hauntings, Horrors, and Dancing with the Dead. True Stories from the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, an 11th generation Creole New Orlean. Bloody Mary is about to preserve the important New Orleans traditions and mystic customs that are in danger of becoming extinct in her hometown, all since Katrina, that horrible situation. She's also a strong advocate for spirits' rights. Bloody Mary runs Bloody Mary's tours and guest lectures at Loyola and Tulane Universities. And here is Bloody Mary on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Good evening. How are you?
Good. I'm looking forward to talking with you about so many things.
Well, I'm here to try to give you all the answers you need.
Okay. Now, I'm told
I'm not alone.
My friend Morgus. Do you know Morgus down there in New Orleans?
I grew up with Morgus, yes.
He, old
I
buddy. They've heard of you down there. You're quite a legend yourself there, Bloody Mary.
Oh, it's nice to know I'm there with the ranks of Morgus. That'd be great.
So,
I think only the locals would know who he is.
Now, yeah. I've got to ask you, I'm not going to ask you if you have a different name, but were you born Bloody Mary, or did you change it, or what happened?
Well, I was born Mary.
Okay.
The Bloody came in later. Well, actually, I was probably born Bloody, too. Most of us are, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Until they clean us up.
You know.
How did you get involved in the supernatural?
They kept knocking at the door. From a very young age, I'd always seen spirits or had prophetic dreams or had some unusual things that I would encounter wandering that I just had to know why. So I would say they came knocking at my door, and I just went with it from there. I really just thought it was natural and what everybody did. I didn't think that unusual of it at the time, and it was all, you know, pretty and soft, and I thought it was like the saints and the angels. Got a little darker around adolescent time.
Yeah.
So not darker per se, but you know, it was more than just that. So you know, I just continued to research. It wasn't as easy as it is today that everything's at your fingertips at the internet, and you know, people can talk so openly about
mm-hmm.
it. Fortunately, I grew up in New Orleans, which this stuff is very, very open anyway.
It sure is. Tell me a little bit about Hurricane Katrina, Mary, when this happened, which was
Katrina
devastating out there.
Was probably the opposite of what most people would think. It was the opposite of what I thought. I managed to get out at 5 o'clock the day before. If you didn't get out by 5 o'clock the day before, you weren't allowed to leave.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Right. Until the next day.
Yeah.
Which is when the shit hit the fan, and then you can...
Mary, can't say that on the radio.
I am so sorry.
Okay.
That is when stuff happened, and that's when you had to leave. You know, so it was before 5 p.m. or not. Being stuck elsewhere and not being able to get back was very hard, and I was psychically still connected. And here you would have many issues. But when I came back, it was stripped. It was a ghost town. It wasn't filled with more spirits and chaos like I expected. It was nothing, flatlined. And it stayed that way for a very, very long time. So it was more eerie than what we're used to here.
I haven't been there since my days in the Navy, way before Hurricane Katrina hit. What's it like today? Have they rebuilt it?
Today is bustling, insane, busier than ever. Can't turn around, changes too quickly. We are about, I guess, back to our regular population, except almost half of that population is new.
New? So they've come in.
From here.
That's interesting.
interesting and scary, and that's why some stuff is at the danger of being lost,
right.
The old traditions and customs and the energies that are here. You know, so many new people, and so quickly, such a huge amount of them. You know, it's making a pretty heavy footprint. However, the spirits are all, they came back. They were gone for a while. They came back. But they didn't start coming back till the people start coming back. So it kind of went hand in hand. My easy explanation is that the spirits evacuated with the families for Katrina.
Interesting take. Now, but they came back with a vengeance, didn't they?
Oh, no. I look at our spirits as the protectors.
That's really?
Built the town. Yes, absolutely. They're the ones that built the town. They're the ones that protect the town. If you don't give honor to the ancestors that came before you, that's when you're going to get in trouble. So without them here, that's when we were in danger. There was not the protector at the gate, so to speak, and they left rather quickly with the doors open, and the dark side had a free rein.
Do you think your gift was genetic?
I don't know. I don't know. I used to joke around about me being related to half the ghosts. And as time went on and the more research I did in some of the bigger stories, I found out I actually was. So maybe some of it is genetic. Part of it is probably to do with where I'm from. I mean, my sister's psychic, my mother in her own way, my father was. But, you know, my mother was a St. Joseph nun before she married my dad, so she focused it in a different way than I did. But it's possible it's genetic. I can't tell you for sure.
All right. Before you came on, I was talking about the folklore legend of Bloody Mary, where you
right.
stand in front of a mirror, you mm-hmm. call the name out. Is that the same Bloody Mary you think you are, or you've taken that name?
Well, if you know or understand the real legend of
you're gonna tell
Bloody
us.
Mary in the mirror.
You're going to tell us.
It's going to take the fun out of it, though.
No, I want to hear what happened. How did this happen?
Okay, basically, you know, the whole concept of an archetype, the whole concept of rite of passage that many people have.
Mm-hmm.
This would be more of a modern rite of passage, generally for adolescent girls. And at a certain time, it's your adolescence, you go to the mirror and the candle. And, you know, the mirror is a portal to the other side. It's always been considered so. So with the candle and the flickering and calling and chanting in the mirror, you're, you know, using the mirror to pull something forth.
Okay.
When I was a teenager, it was see who you're, you know, who you were in a past life, who your future husband's going to be, what you look like as an old woman. It was not a scratch your eyes out of the mirror slasher type thing until slasher movies became popular.
Yeah, no, you're right.
When slasher movies became popular, she changed. As the in the mindset of people changed, so did she. Bloody Mary is your period. Bloody Mary is the rite of passage is you're changing from a child to an adult. That is what that is.
Is it evil today?
Is it evil today? What, your period? Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. If you look at the way that aging is looked at today as evil, then yes, you know. But if you, the more that you put evil out there, the more that you fear, the more that you do that, the more you're calling it. You know, you're creating it yourself. If you're afraid of yourself and what you're going to become and what's inside you, I don't know. There's evil in all of us. You just have to learn how to balance it.
So I bet you love the Ouija board, don't you?
No, I am too lazy to wait for something to be spelled out. I pull my hair out. I do not think it's an evil tool. I think it's a tool like anything else. But to spell out a word, you know, I did it when I was a kid. I know some people that use it more professionally. I seriously would not have the patience and to spell out a word. There are all kinds of tools. Different people use different things. I prefer really nothing. I prefer just to use energy and, you know, be still and try to connect with it and communicate. But there, many people use different tools, and the Ouija board's just one of them.
Well,
but yeah, not my thing.
If I'm getting your taking this the downright in understanding you, it sounds like you think most of these spirits are pretty benevolent. That there
yeah.
isn't any demonic spirit here. Am I picking that up?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say there wasn't. I said that you don't dwell on that. When you're out in a large crowded area or a big club, there's a bunch of negative people hiding in a corner, and there's a couple of really good ones, and most of them in the middle are, some of them are jerks. You know, it's the same kind of thing. You have to use the same kind of idea when you're, you know, when you meet someone on how to figure those things out. But in general, it's not something you should dwell on. And I think, no, most of them, they're there as protectors and healers. And, you know, many of the Aboriginal tribes, the older belief systems that have the ancestral reverence as part of it, will agree that it is giving honor to those that came before and the strength of the bloodline before and the one that's coming ahead that's going to keep us together as a human race, that we have to start paying a little bit of attention to that and not always worry about, you know, what the evil factor is. Yes, there's evil. Yes, I've run into it. I do exorcism sometimes. I ran into probably more after Katrina than any other time, you know, in a concentrated area. But 9 out of 10 times, most of the people you meet are just fine. Same thing in the spirit world.
Well, and I've always believed that good conjures up good, bad conjures up bad. Simple as that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you don't want to go walk yourself right in the middle of a gang war, you know, if you know it's coming.
That's
you know,
right.
You have to put some kind of smarts in there. But in general, no, there was definitely more spirits out there that maybe need your help or that want to help you. It's a two-way street.
Now, tell me about Bloody Mary's tours. Where do you go? What do you talk about?
I do all kinds of things. I do ghost hunts in my way, which is a combination of psychic investigation, both old school and new, and I call it voodoo paranormal. I do storytelling and history throughout the French Quarter, as well as lots and lots of cemetery tours, French Quarter tours, haunted pub tours, all of the above. And I do a lot of private customized things. I do haunted weddings. I do
haunted. Hold on.
I do haunted honeymoon.
What is a haunted wedding?
I don't really always call it that way, but if you would like to, I always do try to call in the spirits of your ancestors and have you have spirit witnesses there. We make a little area for them with their pictures so that the ancestors are invited. And sometimes people want to make it even more paranormal, and they'll do a wedding under the old oaks in the haunted area, and then we'll do a tour after as part of it. So there's a lot of people that want alternative things, and I'm kind of the one that makes all these alternative events. So I have voodoo weddings and haunted weddings, haunted honeymoons, I call them, paranormal romance tours. I create unusual things for each couple or each family or whoever's coming. So I have a lot of customized tours as well as the regular ones that you would go to in a group, you know.
That's different.
I'm more non-commercial.
Okay. Now, in your book, you highlight a lot on Marie Laveau.
Yes.
If my memory serves me right, because I've seen a couple episodes, not all of them, of American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Wasn't she highlighted in that? I'm sure I've mentioned the name.
Low-lighted. Madame LaLaurie was our torturer of the slave. She was highlighted. Marie Laveau was also highlighted there. The two most known spirits in New Orleans. I was hired by American Horror Story to come and do a banishing / exorcism kind of on the set.
Ah.
Because everyone that, in front of the camera and behind, except I think for Jessica Lange, everyone else had a negative paranormal experience. They were not taking any of the things that they were dealing subject matter seriously when they first started. But as the show went on, stuff happened. I was also called in to try to do ritual training, a couple of ritual training films for them, which they didn't listen to. It is best to do these things, people, before you film instead of after the fact when you've already opened the gates and kind of upset a lot of people. Marie Laveau was not a baby killer. Marie Laveau was a very, you know, they had certain things wrong, to say the least.
For television.
But,
right?
Yeah, you know, but I don't know if all spirits understand fiction, the word fiction, okay? They know you're maybe saying something negative about them or something's not going in a right light. Or you're opening gates with partial rituals that you got to hear or there and, you know, not taking it as seriously as possible. And some stuff could happen, and it did. So I believe that as much as I love Kathy Bates as an actor, she was definitely miscast for the torturous Madame LaLaurie, who was a hot cougar with a husband about almost 20 years younger than her, and, you know, it's quite the opposite.
That's not Kathy Bates.
Not Kathy Bates.
No.
Maybe Demi Moore, but not Kathy Bates. You know, they had, she had the long dark hair, kind of pale skin look. And Marie Laveau, as I said, was not a baby killer. She was a healer. Of course, many things have been said about Marie Laveau over the years, but she is still a very heavy patron saint, and she's one of my spirit guides.
So you defend her?
Oh, of course I do.
Okay. Now, when you say she's one of your spirit guides, what does that guide do? Mm-hmm. What do they do?
What do guides do? Well, when you are doing readings or healings or in certain situations, you might think of them as a patron saint. You know, a little bit of a protector, the whisperer in your ear, the one that helps, gives you. She's especially in the area of healings. If I'm doing any, trying to help with any kind of energy healing or any sick person, you know, she's definitely there for
that.
She was our Florence Nightingale in life, and she's, her tomb is the number one visited still in the country. And she's like a folk saint. People go there all over for healings, and they get them.
Can they feel her energy?
I would assume so. I hope so. However, you know, different people would have the way that the help comes through manifest in different ways. I would assume they're feeling the energy. I know several people that have seen her, like, spirit form come and help. They've seen me and her come and help. They've just felt things. They've gotten signs that have answers praying to her, or even money in some cases. It depends on what they're praying for. So, I would hope they would feel the energy. If they let themselves, you know, a lot of people really block things.
Bloody Mary, have you ever had a bad experience, though, with any of these spirits?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You have?
I mean, not with Marie Laveau, not with, as I said, after Katrina, there was a lot of nastiness running around here and had to do a lot of cleansings off places, people, and things.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, I've run into them. But, like, in general, I've had to do 1, 2, 3, 4 different exorcisms on people that have had negative run-ins with Madame LaLaurie. However, I have never had a problem with her, except she did take my cell phone after the exorcism. But besides that,
high-tech spirit.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like a punishment for interfering. There's always a price.
If you ever get a text message from the other side, huh?
I've gotten phone calls. I have gotten weird things pop up in a closed off area with a phone, you know, like pop up on YouTube, which was some kind of movie or a song that had a significant answer to what we were doing, even when the cell phone was sitting far away by itself untouched. So yeah, through electronics, spirits sometimes make their way through. Absolutely.
Why do you find that people do like to be scared? I don't know why, but they do. They like it.
Yes, they do. I mean, a lot of people are afraid of being scared, but a lot of people like the adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
It's like anything. It just wakes them up. It makes them think. And, you know, they'll go out of the way for that feeling. It's exciting.
They go on your tours. They want something to happen.
Well, see, now I don't, you know, when they say, oh, is it scary? It's like, I said, no, it's not a Halloween fun house that people are going to jump out, you know.
It's real stuff.
Right. If it happens, it's real. They are not on the payroll. They are not guaranteed to show up. And I don't force them, and I don't believe in provoking or anything in order to let you have an experience, you know, because that's messing with them. You know,
when we come back, Bloody Mary, I want to talk with you about voodoo, because I think a lot of people have misrepresented exactly what voodoo is. We're going to talk with that Bloody Mary, our guest here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Bloody Mary, her latest book, Hauntings, Horrors, and Dancing with the Dead. We're going to get into that title in just a second. Well, Mary, voodoo, I'm convinced that voodoo is misrepresented, that people think it's evil, it's demonic. I think it's a religion. What you would know better than anybody. Tell us about voodoo.
Well, I'm glad you think that. That's good that you're already there. Fortunately, in the last few years, people have, let's say 10, people have really went out of their way to try to understand voodoo more and not just accepting that everything that isn't mainstream is dark. But there's still a lot of people out there that are afraid of it. There's still a lot of people out there that are just afraid of ghosts in general, you know. But
sure.
But voodoo is a religion of spirits. In fact, the word from the Fon language of ancient Africa actually translates to mean spirits or spirit force. So there's voodoo with the little v, which was like, they all look at the voodoos, that's the spirits. Or voodoo with the capital V, which became the name of the religion. So I would like to compare it to Native American Indian shamanism, but African shamanism, that traveled over with the slave trade, and wherever it landed would dictate the way that it would grow or be squashed or whatever the case may be. New Orleans is a unique area geographically, as well as a variety of other things. So we're the gateway to the Caribbean as a port town. So under French and Spanish rule, Latin Catholic rule, there were different freedoms for the slaves that existed here than in the rest of the country, which allowed voodoo to grow. We had the only place in North America, really, that the slaves could freely day off, gather on their day off of Sunday and do open voodoo rituals and dances and music, and that place became the birthplace of jazz. So if you look back deep enough, you'll find how it influenced, voodoo influenced many things in that are known to be New Orleans now, for it is a dance religion and a musical religion. And you would feed and honor the spirits just as you would your family. So these are the things that I've taken with me into my concept of paranormal investigation or ghost hunting. I'm nice. I like to put the humanness back. You give them a cigarette, you give them a shot, you give them some food that they liked in life. You talk to them, you tell, you know, all of those aspects that are from the ceremonial aspect, I bring into the spirit aspect too.
And tell me if this is correct, Mary, that I was told that, you know, the act of sticking a little doll with pins was really, they put names, you know, because they prayed to, for people. They put like George and they stuck a pin in the little doll with my name on it because that's what they prayed to. Well, I'm told that some media folks came in, videotaped it, filmed it, probably filmed because it was a long time ago, and turned it into sticking pins into a doll named George to hurt him, and it got blown out of proportion. Have you heard that story?
Well, they did that to you? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I was just using my name as an example.
Well, it was long before there was any film that started, propaganda started.
Okay.
Before photography, but I'm sure that helped it. A doll, an effigy, is a tool, a spirit tool like anything else. Think of it as a surrogate. So if I'm making a George doll and George has a problem with his knees, then I'm going to pin some nice herbs around his knees and wrap it around and soothe it so that that area is focusing for George's knees. You know, George forgets a lot of things, so I might have to put a pin in George's head to help him remember. And his heart, he better not forget the Valentine's Day, because if I'm married to George, he better give me that zombie bear that y'all were just asking. Right?
So it's on the way, Mary. It's on the way.
So basically, a pin. What do you do with pins, George? You would pinpoint something on a board with it, right?
Yeah, I would keep papers up on a bulletin board, right, or something like that.
You would, or you would maybe focus. And you know, if you're going to get acupuncture, you might use a pin to direct the energy flow there, right?
If you get that, I've never had that, but you're right.
Yeah, I mean, and what else do you do with pins? You fasten things together. You keep something tight and held. Most of the time, unless you're just really weird or a little kid, you don't go around poking people with pins. You know, it's just not something generally, you know, that you do. But this is not to say that you could not take a pin and jab it back and down and go, George. You know, it is the person, it is humans that do things in the negative way or the positive way. The pin is not to blame. You know, the doll is supposed to be an effigy to help you protect that person, to help them get into school, to help them travel, whatever it is. But it's not to say that some people don't do dark things, and it's not what they teach you in the religion. But these things occur. People are bad. But every culture, every religion has some form of doll in it. It became forever the Hollywood voodoo doll later. But, you know, every culture has some form of effigy that has been used. That would be the hoodoo aspect, not the religious aspect. The voodoo is the religion, serving the spirits, dancing, honoring, helping community. The hoodoo, or what other areas might call conjure, would be what you're thinking of more regularly as like spells. And it doesn't mean that one is good and one is bad. It means that one is the practical, how to help you in your life type thing. The hoodoo, the folk magic, get a new job, get a new car, you know, get well, where voodoo's the religious. So if you want to compare it to Catholicism, since it's so blended in with it anyway, you have voodoo being your high mass and hoodoo being that novena.
Tell us a story from Hauntings, Horrors, and Dancing with the Dead. Give us one of your
Oh,
favorites.
goodness. I'm going to Biblioman. Okay.
And by the way, our good buddy Jeff Belanger wrote a foreword for you. I think the world of him.
Yes, he did. I have known him for a decade or so, and he is up. You know, I sorry not to get a Jeff out of there. Jeff's a good guy. I just did a little interview for him on his Ghost Village up there now, and something on his radio.
Great.
And he wrote the foreword.
He's a good guy.
I bibliomanced to Madame LaLaurie, of course. You know bibliomancy, right?
Mm-hmm. Tell us what happened.
Okay, bibliomancy is just when you open up something and wherever your eye lands, that's what you're supposed to do. So that's why I got, you asked me what story, I opened my book and that's what it came
to. There it is.
So, there we go. Madame LaLaurie is the, she is the most known spirit in the South, I suppose, as far as ghosts is concerned. She's the most infamous spirit. She tortured her slaves, and I suppose she's still torturing them, and they're also getting to torture her a little bit, for her ghost is still very active in the house. There's a, I guess that's a pretty dark story. Are you familiar with the story of Madame LaLaurie?
No. Tell us.
You're not? Okay. Well, basically, a very rich, beautiful socialite moved into a gorgeous mansion in the French Quarter, and she was known for her soirees, balls, and masks that everyone had wanted to attend. It was right around the time that the Americans were coming in, and they were very jealous of the rich Creoles. So when they start spreading rumors of hearing the muffled sound of the lash of the whip during dinner parties and emaciated slaves that had not been fed, many people said, how could this beautiful socialite do such a thing? And they just took it as jealousy until things were revealed. A neighbor saw Madame chasing a young servant girl around the age of 8 one day with a bloody cowhide in her hand. The chase went across the courtyard, in and out of the rooms, and all the way up to the roof. There, Madame was seen beating the girl down to the eaves of the roof. Screams were getting louder, and fears were that she would push her to her death. The neighbor had covered her eyes. She should see no more, but she heard the fatal crash. When she opened them again, Madame was flying down the stairs, bent to pick up a girl that was totally limp, and ran inside the house and hurried to hide her. But it was too late. The neighbor had complained. By law, all 9 of Madame's slaves were confiscated. She was heavily fined. And many rumors began to build about Madame. They thought that she had them secretly returned and to hide them up in the attic where she tortured them more. All was exposed in a fire. Not long after that, when they broke in, there was a horrible sight, and the tortures were rather grotesque. And the whole town was in an uproar. First, they were taken aback, what they thought was a stench of death, but they realized the room was filled with live slaves. They passed crude experimentational-type tables with blood-encrusted devices. They saw shelves on the walls that had glass jars with human organs inside and drinking bottles full of blood. In the far corner, there was iron dog-like cages, and when they got closer, it was not canines, it was humans. One surrounded by buckets of her own blood with her own limbs protruding, and she was nothing except a writhing trunk. Another had their scalp peeled back, exposing worm-infested diseased areas, and others looked more horribly atrophied, looked like crab-like than human.
Jeez.
One by one, these people were brought outside, and now there was an angry mob, but she managed to escape through the crowd. She got to a scooter, bribed it to get across the lake, made it all the way to New York, and went to Paris and died there, never being able to return again, but her body was secretly shipped back, and her spirit still roams the ghost town.
That's evil.
She is. That was what I've had to do the exorcisms for. I've had people that worked there, people that snuck in there, and people that were even cordially invited in that had some great repercussions following them home. On the other hand, I know people that have worked there, that have done decorations there, and, you know, throughout the years, and they don't have trouble. It is very interesting on how some people can get affected and other people can't, being in the same place. It has a lot to do with where you are inside at the time. And like what we talked about earlier, if you're fearing about the evil and worrying about it, who your protections are, if you're aware of your spirit guides, and if you're grounded in the choices you make. All of these things matter when you walk into things, because we do that every day. You don't have to be on a ghost hunt or to walk into a paranormal area that may, I call it a waxy buildup, you know, might attach onto you. But yeah, no, some places more so than others. And that is definitely one of the stories. And I call that a blood print. That house has a heavy blood
print. Is the house still
so
there?
Much that the house is still there. A lot of it didn't burn down, and a lot of it was redone. But it's according to some of the spirits that I spoke to and channeled within the house that the negativity or the evil, if you will, is kind of woven into the core of the building itself.
Right.
But then again, it doesn't attach to everyone that goes there, which is, you know, interesting. You have to keep your life in order. You know, it's like anything. If you're a little run down and you go out, you'll get sicker quicker, right? You know, you have to kind of be spiritually balanced too. But yeah, she's definitely a very well-known story, and I go into great detail in my book about it. In fact, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm starting a YouTube
Oh, you can do that.
And,
sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I am going to have like different historians and people that live there. On every chapter in my book, I'm going to try to get some inside story and show it to you visually, as well as other people that come to town that are authors in this field have interviews.
How will people find you on YouTube?
Bloody Mary New Orleans.
Okay. Simple as that.
And it's just starting now. The show will be out, the first episode will be out in about a week and a half.
Sounds like fun.
And I will be able to have some inside stuff, some ghost stuff, and you'll be able to see the places inside and out that are in the book.
Now the title, Hauntings, Horrors, and Dancing with the Dead. What does Dancing with the Dead have to do with this? Tell me about this.
That's my part. That's the part of the title that I have to do with. Well, as I said before, first of all, we dance with the dead in New Orleans. You've seen the second line jazz dinner on TV, right?
Yep.
I mean, that is part of our core. Any reason to dance, drink, have a party, you know. So
you're like the Irish.
It's like the Irish. Did you also know that New Orleans had the earliest and the largest Irish immigration in this country?
I did not know that.
We also had the largest and earliest Sicilian immigration in this country. So the French Quarter was known as the Little Palermo for almost a century. So, and also the Mafia came over with that.
Oh, they sure did.
I heard y'all talking about some other show while I was waiting on the break, talking about the JFK conspiracy had a lot to do with New Orleans.
Oh, it sure did.
The Harvey Oswald's from here, and his spirit is still wandering around, by the way, saying he's innocent. And, of course, there was the Marcello implications in that and everything else. We go into that a lot.
Jim Garrison, the prosecutor, he was from there?
Yep. Yes, there's a lot of connection with that going on. But, as I said, this was such a port town that it brought so many different people over, but it was actually the Africans who had come over with the idea of celebration with death and dancing with the dead. So we danced in the streets. And, I danced with the spirits. Definitely. It's the whole concept of celebrating with them instead of being afraid of them. So voodoo being a dance religion and a music religion, like most shamanistic religions, it worked for me. It was trying to say, yes, there are horrors, and yes, there are hauntings, but there's also the beauty of connecting with your, you know, spouse or your mother after she passed. You know, there's also some beauty. So in my book, I wrote about how I connected with my mom and the ex-husband. So some nice things and some scary things. It's a roller coaster, I suppose, of emotions in the book.
What do you think of all these television shows about zombies?
About zombies?
Yeah.
That they don't really, you know, do their research. I mean, my God. I mean, we could kill or stop the zombie apocalypse in a flash. All you got to do is get salt gun and hit them with that, because they can't deal with salt. They'll know they're dead. They go back into the grave, dig their own hole, and all is done. You know,
you just throw salt at them.
Salt, yeah. Salt's good for demons. Salt's good for ghosts. Salt's great for zombies. Salt is for the living, not for the dead.
What does it do?
Tool and ally.
What's it do?
It kind of absorbs the life force and kills it. Supposedly, you know, the soul removed from the body in the alleged, and this is not part of New Orleans, alleged chemical zombie. If they ever got any food that had salt in it, they would immediately, you know, kind of snap back into the reality that they were dead, and they would cease to function as a servant and go back into the death zone. So salt Salt's just been used for so many different things, but its absorbing quality, I believe, is what's so wonderful about it. It also preserves. So to use salt is a great protection. You should carry some with you on ghost hunts. I always do. Because if anybody gets hit too heavy with spirit, even if it's not a bad spirit, you got to drive, and things
Yeah.
like that, it'll you take a little in your mouth and it grounds you.
Huh.
You need to ground before you go back into certain things. I mean, so salt is always good to carry, and then if zombies come up out of the graves, or bad spirits there, or even if you just need to be grounded,
Have you
salt is the
ever had
answer.
to cleanse a house from a spirit?
Yes, of course. Oh yeah. Well, I don't know. My house was on the Ghost Adventures, and I was on two other episodes of theirs. I went and did a ritual out at a Magnolia Plantation and a few others. And I had to cleanse my own house. Well, everybody should cleanse their own house, by the way, on a regular basis. Regular people that don't do this for a living, once every 6 months should do it. But, once a month on a short-term basis, and then a heavier dose is needed sometimes. I mean, I had to do a lot of cleansings after Katrina because we were bringing in lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Things were just attaching left and right. So there are certain times that you have to do more.
Do they attach on their own, or do you have to invite them in?
Oh, no, they can attach on their own. Because, as I said, you don't have to be in a ghost hunt. You don't have to be that. You could be hanging out with a friend, and you could be consoling them, and whatever's on them kind of rubs off on you. It's just like a germ, Like it sometimes it's going to bother you and sometimes it's not, so it just depends. But this was carried all through, and there was a lot of negative people here through that whole Katrina thing. They were carrying stuff, and they were just people that were very sad and depressed,
Oh,
and they were
sure.
giving out antidepressants like little candy at all the little
Were
med
they
camps all
really?
over town. Oh my
W
gosh,
without
I didn't think
prescriptions,
anybody.
just popping pills to
Oh, here,
people.
you want this? Here, pop, 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 pop. Oh, they were just giving them out like crazy.
God.
So people were zombies. Talk about zombies. They were zombies
They
when
were
Katrina hit.
zombies. That's
They had
right.
the glass eyes. They were wandering, not knowing what's going on. I could see when people were attached from afar, and those would always be the ones that want to come talk to me, and I have to go the other way. Like things were just attaching left and right. It was not pretty. So, I mean, to me, that was a true time of zombies in our town.
Mary, when we
Wow.
come back in a moment, I want to talk with you about curses, and also we're going to take some phone calls, questions for you, but also share your stories of hauntings, horrors, when we come back.